Hey everyone, and welcome back to Purple Bro Radio. This edition is for Monday, June the 13th, 2011. My name is Craig Stanwood. I'm a staff writer at PurpleBro.com. I'm here along with the managing editor of PurpleBro.com, Andrew Martin. Andrew, how are you?
Man, is it really June 13th already?
Unless every calendar in my vicinity is lying to me.
Well, it's already the middle of June. The season's almost half over. God, I feel like we need to go like suck as much base. Here, Greg, we're canceling the podcast. I'm watching MLB Network, and the game's over, isn't it? Giants and Reds. Man, I gotta suck in all the baseball I can. What am I gonna do without baseball? Oh wait, it's still the middle of the season. We're all right. It's always a little after a losing streak, after a long month of losing like May was. Hey, we still do our duties and we write our articles and we follow stuff and Fisher never gives up with his insightful tweets and all the good stuff like that. But a little bit of that spark for me kind of goes away. Not the spark of I'm a big Rockies fan and a big baseball fan, but just the the spark of I want to watch every single second. I still do everything I can to watch as much as I can, but it becomes a little bit more of a job when the team sucks when they weren't supposed to suck.
Yeah, today being June 12th as we're recording this, we are 74 days into the season. I can tell because I've been tracking the service time for Rockies roster. And, 74 out of a little over 172. So we're not quite halfway yet, but we are certainly a sizable chunk into the season. For me, the middle of the month, looking at June 13th always means time to pay my loans. but
middle of the month means it's about time for paying bills too. I hate that feeling.
Yeah. All right, so I have do you have something to say?
No.
You sure? You sound like you're about to start something there.
It was still off topic, so go right ahead and launch into real things.
Well, my thing is sort of off topic too. I just have a goofy story to tell.
Please do.
Yeah, so I mean, my field is film, television, and so forth, but I've been working, for those of you who don't know, at a golf course for some part-time work just as I'm looking for a full-time job. And sometimes some strange things happen, and I mean, you know, I'm not a golfer, so I don't really understand like about 20% of the things that are even going on. But anyway, you know, one of my jobs is to clean out the golf carts before putting them away or turning them around or whatever. And sometimes you get, people leave stuff in there. And obviously one thing that out of town golfers will do is they will, you know, fly on a plane with their golf clubs, so their clubs have the airport tag on them and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm getting at. Well, anyway,
yeah.
I found one of these tags of golf clubs in a cart today, and I just happened to glance at the name, and I'm holding it right now. The name on this tag is Josh Fogg.
Really?
Yeah, now I didn't see Josh Fogg. I didn't see the person who dropped off the cart, so I don't know if it's actually Josh Fogg.
It might be. My brother, when he was in college, he used to go to a coffee shop over Stella's Coffee Shop. Some of you listening might know the place.
I live right by it.
Exactly, so there you go, Stella's. And he said he ran into Josh Fogg there. He was too chicken to say anything because he was like 20 at the time, and he was like, oh,
mm-hmm. Well, no, it does make sense because Fogg doesn't live here, but he spent a lot of his professional career here, so he obviously knows the area, and he's also a golfer. He said so many times when he was interviewed. So it would make perfect sense for him to, A, be golfing in Denver, and B, to have had to fly clubs over here. So,
and that makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't see it himself, but I just thought I'd grab this thing. So now I might have a luggage tag for Josh Fogg. So that's my weird little story.
Funny. You should that might actually make for an interesting discussion on the website. I just had an idea there. Someday when we're low on content, either you or me just write up the quick thing about, you know, how you found Josh Fogg's golf tag, and then I don't know. I think it would be kind of a fun way for everyone to talk about ways that they've run into professional athletes, specifically Rockies players, around town in, you know, seemingly normal situations. Like my mom was at a Chipotle, and she said she saw Matt Holliday and his wife and kids.
Yeah, I know a couple.
Like, really?
I know a couple people who say they've seen Matt Holliday. I mean, I went to school in L.A. It was at film school at USC. I got to see a lot of famous people there, but I've never really seen any pro athletes, and if I have, I haven't been aware of it because, you know, other than baseball, I don't really know who any of them are anyway. But
yeah.
I can't say that I don't think I've ever actually interacted with a Rocky outside of at Coors Field. So,
well, I know that a couple of my friends, one of whom is a user on the site, he lives, at least for a time, was living downtown in, you know, that ballpark loft area. And I said he'd more, you know, somewhat regularly see Tulowitzki cruising around during the off season, just, you know, heading to the stadium, obviously, to go work out.
Mm-hmm.
I found that interesting. Well, not interesting, it's totally understandable, but, like, I don't know, I just, it's, I imagine a lot of the players will go home when, during the off season at least, or, you know, have somewhere to be during the, you know, during the season, but
mm-hmm.
they have lives too. I mean, I guess it kind of depends on who we're talking about, because we're talking about, like, Matt Lidstrom, who lives here, and has been living here. There's a chance to see him around. And, you know, Tulowitzki obviously lives here now. We've seen Giambi. I mean, there's that picture that we put on Purple Row a couple times of Jason Giambi and Turay Tulowitzki at the Nuggets game. So, I mean, it's not exactly out of the line of reason to think that Jason Giambi just hopped on a plane and came in for the Nuggets game. It's not like he can't afford it or anything.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, we know a lot of baseball players make their offseason homes here in Colorado because, well, you know, for those of you who don't know, Colorado is kind of sort of amazing and, you know, great climate. And so, you know, don't even worry about it. Anyways, you're right, though. I don't run into any Rockies players. And granted, I've just been living in the downtown-ish area, but I don't go out for anything. I don't, I'm not really a clubber, so I don't, I mean, I'm not saying that the Rockies are all clubbers, but there's a chance you might see some of the younger players out at, you know, Jet or whatever. I just don't run into anyone, and maybe it's
mm-hmm.
just because I'm on all the wrong places at all the wrong times, or I'm just boring, or some combination of the two, which is probably leaning heavily towards the latter, but yeah, you could be out there seeing Rockies players. Instead, you're inside writing about them. What's wrong with this picture?
Well, I'd rather write about them than meet them, to be honest.
I'm all weird about meeting them.
I enjoy writing quite a bit about all sorts of stuff, so... And again, I've never really been interested in, you know, collecting autographs or bragging about that I've met so-and-so, what's their face or so forth, so.
Yeah.
Okay, well, any other comments on that, or are we moving on?
Well, not really. I remember one night I was leaving a game and, saw this really tall Latin-looking guy with short, you know, very short hair, and it looked kind of like Ubaldo. But he's just walking right there on 21st and Blake. I'm like, that's not Ubaldo. That would be just too easy.
Uh-huh.
No one is crowding around him or being all excited. So I'm like, it's probably just a tall guy who kind of looks like a pitcher.
Now, I actually have joked about Ubaldo though, because he apparently goes jogging in Washington Park, which is right where I live. Like, I'm 3-4 blocks away from it. I could theoretically, like, go out at, like, 5:30 in the morning or whenever he's jogging there and just, like, look for that really distinguishable white car he has and see if he actually is hanging out around there. But
a former coworker of mine said he went out for a bike ride around Lash Park and he ran into Ubaldo and said hi and said, hey, great start, and blah, blah, blah. And Ubaldo's like, hey, thanks, man, I appreciate it, and drove off in his white Escalade.
Yeah. And I've heard several people on the internet and elsewhere mention they've seen him there. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so why don't we talk a little bit about the divisional realignment proposal that was put in front of the Players Association that is
mm-hmm.
reviewing it at this point. Look, there've been a lot of different realignment proposals. It seems like one of the first things that you find whenever you look at like an ESPN message board or something is everybody has to post their opinion on the unbalanced schedule and on the imbalance between the two leagues and so forth. And everybody's got an opinion on it. So, I'm a little tired of trying to describe it over and over. So I don't know if you want to have a go at it, at specifically what they're looking at with this proposal, and then I'm sure I'll have some thoughts on it.
Well, let me, let's see. I'm pulling up MLB SB Nation, and baseball's considering realigning the 30 teams into two equal leagues of 15 teams each. And that we've been this has been talked about a lot because
yes.
The 4-team division of the AL West does not really seem fair compared to the 16 division of the NL Central. It's part just right now the talent levels there because Seattle's playing surprisingly well, Oakland's playing surprisingly bad, and Texas is kind of right in the middle of things. And I guess I don't know what the Angels story is, but it's a 4-team division, and if two teams in that division are just god awful, then the Angels have been the reigning team in that division for quite a while now, up till like last year. But it seems unfair that they should be able to feast on a weaker division that's also short on teams, so that just increases your chances of being on top of the division anyhow. Whereas in the Central, the NL Central, it's kind of the same story, but it's going to be a lot harder for another team to kind of crawl their way to the top. And I don't know. I mean, either way, I mean, having divisions that are unequally sized does seem a bit unfair because, it just is. Anyways.
And it also nags at anyone who's obsessive compulsive, I'm sure.
You want to make that nice even division.
Yes.
But so the thought is that the possibility of the leagues could be one size fits all of these two 15 team our leagues would also include having no divisions, and the top five qualifiers in each league would make the playoffs. So we're talking about kind of a NFL style play, I guess. Well, NFL is the wrong word because it's still divisional play. I was thinking about two wild cards, but that's obviously not the case. I don't know. It seems fair and unfair at the same time. I personally like the concept of winning your division. It's almost like, the presidential election. You win states, and then those states add up. I mean, I guess that's a bad example, but I like the idea of a series of smaller competitions to make it in, and the wild card added. So when you have a situation where, you have a near 100 win team that did not win their division, they don't make the playoffs. That does seem a bit silly as far as wanting to see the best, because the playoffs are obviously there to determine the best. And if you don't have the best being aptly represented, well, then you lost out. And this happens all the time. I mean, we saw, I think it was 04 or 05, I think it was 05, where the Padres were at 82-80 to finish the season.
Mm-hmm.
A whole whopping game over 500, and it was a very, very embarrassing year for the National League West, but they took a playoff spot away from any number of, a couple third-place teams, which would have been more deserving of a playoff spot just based on record. So in principle, I guess I don't hate the idea of it, but there's two different viewpoints on it so far. One that Rob Neyer has suggested, basically, look at the history of baseball realignment in any way, shape, or form. Any opposition has been almost entirely based around fear of change. Oh, we can't do that. It's going to screw up all the history that's in place, and it's going to be watered down, and playoff appearances won't mean as much. And at the same time, it seems almost like too many of the old-school baseball fan is being a bit too hard-nosed about things. Because if you have to win the National League to make the playoffs, or even in a two-division-per-league setup, you have to win your 8-team division to make the playoffs, it's going to... It makes for a more boring postseason, a short postseason, I'll give you that, but kind of a boring postseason. It takes a lot of hope out of clubs that aren't necessarily in super prime spot to be able to win 100 games a year. It's kind of a trade-off, because I can see the side that says we want the best of the best of the best in the playoffs, but I can also see the side that says we want more teams in the playoffs, so you might be able to appeal to more markets.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really. There's no right or wrong necessarily to it at this point.
No,
but I don't know. I kind of don't like the free for all. I like the small regional, so to speak, battles of the divisional champions, and then the wild card just to add the fourth best team in the National League, or maybe the second best team depending on how we're looking at it, mm-hmm. or third. You get the point. Coming from a Rockies fan's perspective, we've obviously won the wild card twice, or three times, Obviously, the first in its inception, and in the original Rocktober run of 2007, and then the 2009 playoff run, all three involved a wild card victory. But I guess the problem is that we haven't won the division yet. So, shame on the Rockies for never winning the division, but at the same time, I don't know, I like the way the playoffs are shaped, because you have the short series, and then the two long series, and it's, I mean, maybe it's a gimmick or whatever, but it does kind of weed out it weeds out teams a little bit differently, and it's more interesting. Why would we want to oversimplify that? I mean, why would we want to just chop that down into, you know, just best five teams? I can see why, but it seems boring. Maybe that's just me, but I think that's a very boring setup.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, when it comes to the postseason, I've always been more interested in the realignment more than how the postseason would necessarily change. I'm not a baseball traditionalist, not only because I have not been a fan of baseball for a long time, but also because I'm not really a traditionalist of any kind. I always do embrace the suggestion, at least, of variety. And so I've never really been like outright opposed to adding teams to the postseason, or changing the way they're picked or anything like that, as long as it makes sense. You know, I'd obviously be opposed if like they drew one out of a hat or something like that.
Oh yeah.
But for me, I'm more interested in looking at the scheduling of a season, how and why it could be flawed as it is, and then what rearranging the league is going to do to change it. A lot of people hate the idea of having interleague play during the entire season. First of all, this kind of goes back to what you were saying at the beginning of the conversation about how some of the more traditional type people who might be a little bit afraid of the change will say, oh, you can't schedule it that way. Well, I actually, 2 years ago, because this idea has been thrown around a lot, I made a fake schedule for the entire league. Just like I was bored for like 1 week in the middle of a summer of like my junior year of college or something like that. And I just threw one up and it worked fine. I didn't have it at 162 games anymore, but the proper amount of interleague series pretty much matches up just fine. And basically one would be going on at the same time, or one would be going on during every cycle of series, basically. And I guess that really depends on how you view interleague play, because I think most people look at it as something really special. It's like an event. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's just more games. It's cool because they're against teams you don't see as often, but beyond that, it doesn't mean anything else to me. And the reason that is, I think, is because if I have any radical position on the restructuring of baseball, it would be that I support the elimination of the leagues, the league division between American and National League. I would be opposed to eliminating divisional play, not only because of the smaller competition that you were mentioning, but because for practical reasons, you know, it makes sense that we play more games against the California teams than against the New York teams. Mm-hmm. And so forth. And for the record, this is also why a lot of the other proposals don't really make sense. Like, you read a lot of people who are like, you know, I'm just going to write up a new realignment without really putting any geographical thought into it. We'll have a northern division that has, like, Seattle and Milwaukee and Boston and New York Yankees in it. Yeah, and it's like, no. Seattle is not, it does not make sense to send them to New York like three times a season. You have to divide it by like time zone more than anything else.
You really do. That's one of the things that makes the divisions work the way they do for the most part, because most of the NL East is obviously all in the Eastern time zone. Most NL Central is in the Eastern, or is in the Central time zone, but you have a couple like the Pirates who are in the East. Cleveland is in the East.
Yeah, we're the only team that's always in the Mountain time zone. Arizona is there for some of the time, but
But still, then you have, you know, the three California teams in the NL West, as well as the two California teams. Well, yeah, Seattle, Los Angeles, or Anaheim, or whatever we're calling them, Oakland, all in the East, or right. The West, I mean. And I believe that Dallas is in the Central, isn't it?
Dallas?
Well, sorry, the Texas Rangers play in Dallas.
Yeah. They're in the AL West.
Yeah, I thought I was talking about the AL West.
You were. I was just saying that they weren't in the Central.
No, sorry, Central time zone.
Oh, yeah. That would make sense, I think. I believe that along that southern border, it's only New Mexico that's in the Mountain time zone.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading somewhere, well, it's just kind of knowledge if you know anything about the time zones, but the only major TV market in the Mountain time zone is Denver.
Mm-hmm.
The closest next ones you have are Salt Lake City and Albuquerque. And past, I mean, no offense to other states, but I mean, Cheyenne's not nearly as big of a draw as either especially if Denver. It's closer to Albuquerque and Salt Lake, but then you keep going north and, you know, what's in Montana that really draws that much of a, you know, TV audience?
Right. Well, I won't spend too much time on this, but obviously I follow this sort of thing pretty closely. The Mountain time zone is the only time zone in terms of television broadcast that is often neglected for live broadcast. It's not so much anymore as it's become easier to do, but one of the most unusual things, right, okay, is whenever they air live national things, like, say, the Academy Awards or something like that, they're put in prime time on the East Coast, and everything that is aired on the East Coast in real time is also aired in real time in Central Time, 1 hour up. Those things are aired at the same time. And then you have Mountain, which is 1 hour behind, and then you have the West, which is actually 2 hours behind us, but they would still air stuff live there in the middle of the day, like 4 or 5 o'clock. Whereas it's like 7 or 8 on the East Coast, but we would be on a delay. And this was true of the Academy Awards up until about 2 or 3 years ago. It's just one of those interesting things about how that's aligned. And it definitely does speak to the kind of emptiness of our time zone, if you will, that it's never really going to be a specific priority. But talking about all this time zone stuff, this is why it makes sense to move Houston to the AL West. Of those six teams in the Central, there's actually a lot of benefits to this, and I think a lot of people have been trying to point out weaknesses to the idea. Why don't you move Milwaukee back or something like that? Well,
yeah.
Houston makes the most sense, and I mean, people will say that it's because of the rivalry that they could develop with the Texas Rangers. I tend to think of it, again, more as a practical standpoint. Having another team nearby the Texas Rangers in their division is going to help both teams. Because as it stands right now, Texas fans are kind of screwed over by the fact that, like, all of their divisional games are two time zones different than they are.
Yeah, so they got to start watching their games at 9 o'clock on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I think they schedule it. Maybe it's one of those things where they, like, schedule the Texas games, like, 30 minutes earlier or something like that to give them a little bit of extra. Yeah, but if they played the Astros, you know, 18 games a season, they'd have it a little bit better in that regard.
You have a little bit of that Texas Central time zone, like, solidarity or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah. Now, the other... this isn't the kind of thing that's actually been proposed right now, but the realignment that people who are afraid of constant interleague play always suggest is add two teams to the AL and then split the divisions into four divisions of four teams.
So an NFL realignment.
Essentially. You know, I'm no expert on how the NFL lines up, but I do know they have four divisions in each. Is it a conference?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
The AFC and the NFC, it's essentially the same thing. It's AFC, NFC, and then you have North, South, East, West for both the AFC and the NFC.
But we wouldn't be able to have a North and South. We'd probably have a West, a Midwest, a Central, and an East, or something like that. And in that situation, the Rockies would probably be switching divisions. We'd probably be moving into a division with, like, maybe... Chicago Cubs, St. Louis Cardinals, maybe the Astros, something like that. Because if we were having the National League stay the same and adding both teams to the AL, you know, the NL West would be Padres, Giants, Dodgers, and Diamondbacks. So, I suppose if we wanted to keep our, kind of whatever limited history we've built in the current setup, it does kind of benefit the Rockies that the current, proposed realignment doesn't really change the NL West at all. So, I mean,
I'm kind of moving off this, actually. I mean, the idea of a four division alignment hasn't been proposed. It's actually, I mean, it's fun to think of the fantasy ideas here, but the one that's really being proposed here is just a elimination of divisions and what that would mean for baseball, just your best five teams. So, in a sense, you're probably going to see all three division leaders in that five-team best-of matchup anyhow.
Right.
Because, I mean, there's a couple years, like I mentioned, with the 82-80 San Diego Padres made the playoffs as a division leader. And, you know, it's one of those where everyone else rolls their eyes and say, okay, you have to give the NL West their division this year because that's the rules. And but the playoffs would have likely been better because the Cardinals just came in and, you know, stepped on the Padres and it wasn't even a series. But if you had the best of five out there, you know, an 82-80 team is probably going to miss. But interestingly enough, we talk about how many wins it'll take to win your division, as opposed to what it would be, which is how many wins would it take to be in the top five.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually might, you know, I'm still not sure how I feel about the idea. Basically, the game itself is not going to change. Who you are going to be playing is going to be changing, but it's still going to be baseball. There's still going to be 27 outs per side. Well, you know what I mean. It's still 90 feet to first base, and if a ball leaves the park, it still counts the home run. That's not changing. Baseball will stay the same in that regard. It's just a matter of, you know, I guess not even planning your resources, because every team wants to go and win 100 games a year no matter what. No team wants to, you know, oh, we think 72 and 90 is an all right season this year. No one's thinking that, obviously. So you're still going to play the same way. Teams are going to be built the same way. You're still going to strategize the same way. Your matchups are just going to change. And I see the point of the, you know, the interleague schedule being kind of special. And that's just because, I mean, come on, it's Colorado. Nobody ever thinks about Colorado and this kind of stuff. And so to say, hey, the White Sox are coming to Colorado, that's kind of cool. Not because I think the White Sox are that, you know, super special or anything along those lines. It's just something different. The Minnesota Twins are coming to Colorado. That's kind of cool.
Well, and for us, who obviously watch the road games as well, getting to see our team play in environments that, and markets that they don't usually. Like, I'm really excited to see the Rockies go play the Yankees in a couple weeks.
Yeah. And part of that, I don't know, I mean, I don't hate the idea of of constant interleague play. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I mean, the whole special concept, yeah, like I said, it's just for the novelty of that, of the month of June. You're like, hey, look at that. We got AL teams coming to Coors Field now. Ha ha, you don't have a DH anymore. You got to play our game. And, you know, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. As it stands, interleague just favors the National League anyways.
And yet, because they have so often had trouble winning the interleague contest, really, but although that's changed in recent years, the Rockies have always played really well in interleague. But as far as I know, at least a couple of years ago, the AL was always destroying the NL across the board. You would look at the scoreboard and it would be like each day of interleague, it would be like 12 AL wins or something like that. It was pretty crazy.
It's depressing almost because I don't know what I like to fight as hard as I can against the concept that the National League is a quadruple A league.
Well,
I find it demeaning, frankly, when especially when national sports writers say it. I'm like, really? You're gonna insult more than half of baseball fans by saying we're a quadruple A league? And no, I don't really take it that personally. I'm not, you know, typing up furious emails to, you know, whatever sports writer offended me or what have you, but I mean, we're not quadruple A baseball.
Yeah,
shut up. The Giants just won the World Series against your all. I mean, the Rangers weren't exactly the almighty team, but they were able to have the giant offense and Cliff Lee, and the Giants are able to beat them, and so on and so forth. The
I haven't seen...
Yeah, this...
Go ahead.
You haven't seen...
I haven't seen anybody really call us a quadruple A league. I see plenty of people who still believe that the AL is a superior league in terms of talent or in terms of operation or what have you. But that's changed not only since we had, I mean, the NL has shown itself up or has shown itself to be talented enough to win the World Series, at least recently.
Yeah.
And we also...
It keeps going back and forth. And I mean, look at the last several World Series. 2010 Giants, the 2009 Yankees, 2008 Phillies, 2007 Red Sox, 2006 Cardinals, 2005 White Sox, 2004 Red Sox. It's been going back and forth for quite a while now. I think it was the 2001, the Diamondbacks won. 2002, it was the Angels. 2003, the Marlins. So yeah, it keeps going back and forth like that. I mean, there's obviously that spell in there where the Yankees were winning everything in the 90s, but over the last decade, we've seen it go back and forth and back and forth, and that doesn't really necessarily mean that there's complete parity between both leagues as far as just talent, never mind anything else. But it does say that, you know, at least the best team in the National League can step up and play the best team in the American League, and it's going to be a good, you know, it's going to be something anyways.
Well, and it also helped that the NL finally won an All-Star game last year.
That helped, too.
Yeah.
But I guess the thing, it's true, though. I mean, it's not that the National League is a quadruple A league, and if you say it is, I'm, you know, you're banned or whatever. look at me in my internet rage and power. I will bring retribution. The fact is, though, when you think about Major League Baseball and for lack of a better term, the stupid GMs, the ones that everyone loves to beat up on, the ones who make the really questionable moves, like who's the dumbest GM in the American League, you know, just message board wise speaking. I mean, everyone knows it's Dayton Moore. Everyone's always beating up on Dayton Moore for, you know, the kind of players he signs and the contracts he signs them to, and he traded for Jeff Francoeur and things like that, you know? And
Jeff Francoeur's been pretty dang good, though.
The irony of it is that yeah. Some of these moves actually pan out, but like Jason Kendall to a multi-year. What were you thinking signing Jason Kendall to a multi-year deal or Gil Mesh's ace $55 million contract? Silly stuff like that. But when you think about the National League, who are the jackass GMs over here? Well, I mean, things have changed now that the Mets have changed hands a little bit there, but Omar Minaya was one of them.
Ed Wade.
You have Ed Wade, Ned Colletti. I had another one in mind, but it just slipped my mind. But Jim Hendry, the Cubs. There he is, another one right there. It's so easy to point out, oh, here's all the stupid guys in the National League. But the American League dum-dums, just there's Dayton Moore, and who else do you beat up on? You know, you can't touch Billy Beane, apparently, because despite the fact that the A's are, you know, now that everyone's caught on to the whole sabermetrics thing, their Moneyball strategy isn't working anymore, so they have to find someone else, or something else to try to find a market inefficiency on. But, you know, the American League just seems to be comprised of, for the most part, and everybody makes a dumb move. Oh, the Orioles are a big question mark, too, but I think my point still stands. I think there's more better-run teams in the American League than there are in the National League, just percentage-wise. And that's a big disparity on why the American League is the better talented league. I don't really think Interleague's necessarily a fair sample size to look at either. I don't know, three series, and the American League is dominating the National League. I mean, after a while, it does seem to make sense. You could make the reverse sample size argument and say that the sample size is plenty and that, you know, all these years of AL dominance in Interleague has caused this trouble. But as long as the interleague play is still doled out fairly, that every team plays in the American League as often as every other team does, you don't have one team saying, oh, well, we would have made the playoffs, but we had to play the AL, you know, five times as opposed to four or whatever the case may be.
Well, of course, as it stands now, not everybody does play the AL the same amount of times.
Obviously, and...
Yeah.
But when we have to inflate that over the course of an entire season and not just a magical 3 weeks in the month of June, you know, there could be cause for reason for pause more than really a complete grievance to file or something along those lines. But I don't know, as long as things are doled out evenly and it's not, you know, one favorite team doesn't have to play the Yankees as much or whatever, yeah, you get my point.
Mm-hmm.
it's not a, I don't think, Rob Nyer's point was about the special thing, about it being a special time, that, like I keep saying, that magical 3 weeks, is that it hasn't been special for anyone for quite a while now. Nobody cares. I mean, yay, you get to see the teams you don't see very often. Oh well, that's the end of the story right there. Nobody cares that much about, you know, who's going to, league you're drawing. It does seem a bit unfair sometimes to see, you know, one division draw a much harder division that's usually a harder division on a regular basis. But even then, I mean, again, nobody cares. It's nifty, and that's about the end of the story. It's not a major factor in your baseball season.
Well, this is precisely why I kind of like the idea of getting rid of the league concept as a whole. I appreciate the small scale separation between divisions, but it inspires too much separation between the entirety of Major League Baseball. The fact that people even still consider the other league to be like alien or special or other, quote unquote. It seems just like kind of an old fashioned sporty cliche that all of your, you know, actions, all of your play, all of your goals and ambitions throughout a professional sporting season has to be to win the spot to oppose somebody from like the other side. And that somehow makes it really interesting. I mean, I may be the only one who thinks this way, but I kind of get frustrated by the idea that the World Series can never be between, you know, one team or two teams specifically because they're in the same league, as opposed to, it feels like the winner of that should be able to oppose the second best team at all, rather than the best team in another quote-unquote league that, to me, seems entirely arbitrary.
But if that's the case, then what's the point of even having playoffs? I mean, we're talking about going back to pre-divisional play, where you win the NL pennant, you face the winner of the AL pennant, and that's the end of the story. I don't know. I know that you're saying that without the breakdown of league, without leagues, or just the two best teams. But I mean, how many Red Sox Yankees World Series do we need to see?
Well, before, ideally, I would hope that there is enough talent elsewhere in baseball that wouldn't happen all the time, or ever.
Well, think about it, though. I mean, look at the last several seasons, and it's not always the case. I don't have the numbers in front of me on which team has been consistently better or which two teams have been the best in the league, but it stands to reason that the Yankees and the Red Sox are going to be damn near the close every year.
Well, and again, I'm not advocating the elimination of playoffs. It would just be different. They wouldn't be league-based. It would be you take maybe the top eight teams in all of baseball and throw them into a playoff bracket. It would still have the sort of crapshoot mentality of the playoffs. So the team that won, you know, the most doesn't necessarily make it to the World Series. But I don't like the seclusion that division or that sort of segregation puts on there.
Your point stands too, because when you get to the NLCS and the ALCS, that's almost bigger than the World Series. I mean, want to win the World Series. That's the goal, the World Series. But I mean, look at 2004, and I always bring that up. But that was one of the greatest, like, you know, twin championship series ever. Yankees and Red Sox, the Red Sox coming back from 3-0 to win in 7, and then the Houston St. Louis series, which only went to 6, but I mean, that was the year you I think it was actually the next year that Pujols broke Brad Lidge, but I remember seeing the point is that the Houston the Houston versus St. Louis thing went on 2 years straight there. And it was awesome. I mean, that was when Clemens was with Houston, and he came in relief in that one 18-inning game, and oh, man, those are the greatest. And then you get to the World Series, and it's like, oh, the Red Sox have momentum, and they swept the Cardinals. That was boring. And the next year, oh, look, the White Sox have momentum, and they beat the Astros in 5. Or no, they swept them, too. That's really boring. It's like, oh, God, we just won the big exciting matchup, and now we have to go do it again with a team that we've never seen. I don't get it. At least the Rockies saw the Red Sox once in 2007, but even then, it was still kind of like, You know, there's nothing built up here. Nobody's, I mean, ever. A lot of people say, oh, we want to see the upstart Rockies and beat the team, you know, the who, I mean, it'd be the Diamondbacks, but, you know, everyone wanted to see the big matchup, but then it comes Red Sox, Rockies, it's over. And then that's, there's kind of a, for Rockies fans, obviously it's much, much bigger than that, because this is our, us on the grand stage, and oh my god, the Rockies are in the World Series, can you believe it? So it was a big deal to us, but I mean, with Red Sox fans, they're like, they must have felt like they're just jumping through a hoop before they got handed the trophy. And, you know, maybe that speaks to, you know, maybe they should have taken this a little more seriously, but they didn't have to, obviously. But I think you're right there in that regard, that no, once you get to the World Series, you still care, but you cared more about the ALCS and the NLCS, and you know you did, because we saw the Diamondbacks all season long.
Well, and as
and
you... As usual, I'm not just speaking from a place of, like, excitement. I just go crazy thinking about the fact that this arbitrary league division suggests that only one team from each side can oppose each other in the World Series. There's a limited number of possible events there. One of 14 versus one of 16, as opposed to two of 30. And basically what I would be advocating is keeping divisions. We could even keep this hypothetical proposed realignment and have six divisions of five teams each that all are equal in terms of where they stand in the in relationship to each other. There's no separation between one Western division and the other Western division, other than the divisional separation. There's no league separation. And so you take the winner of each of those divisions and then maybe two wild cards for a total of eight teams. And those eight teams from any division are, you know, seeded or some such. And then we'll play each other in sort of a regular playoff with no league distinction. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes sense, but there's one hole in your argument here.
Okay.
Not so much a hole, but something you got to respond to. What do you do with a designated hitter?
Well, that's obviously one of several concerns. I don't...
That's a big one for me.
Yeah.
Before you answer, I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I have a good friend who actually phrased it perfectly for me, so Kellen Murphy, if you happen to be listening, I'm shouting out to you on the podcast. Anyways, he was saying the reason he loves having the designated hitter in the American League versus the National League is because it makes the two leagues different. Yes, there's traditionalists who say get rid of the designated hitter, it's an abomination to the sport, and then more of the new style fans saying, well, you know, it's more exciting, and yeah, everyone totally wants to see your pitcher bunt or strike out on, you know, flailing weakly on pitches or whatever. And yeah, it does add that once in a while excitement when you're, you know, your pitcher who's batting 126 on the season gets that RBI single, or does something like Jason Hamill and hits a home run, you know? But for the most part, it's not a legitimate spot in the lineup. You're just, it's an out that you're trying to, you know, get to, hopefully, and strategically use it to screw up the next inning or what have you. Whereas, in the American League, you might not need to pinch hit the entire game. You might just have a, you look at the box score and it might be the same, you know, 18 names on the box score the entire time, you know, obviously just for the lineups. But he said the reason that it makes it different is if you look at AFC versus NFC, or in basketball and hockey, the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference, there might be different slight nuances to the game over how often they run running plays versus passing plays, or, you know, whatever other style of play they might be employing, but it's exactly the same game. The rules are exactly the same. Nothing changes at all. Whereas in baseball, all of a sudden, American League managers, and this is what I mentioned in the interleague part of the conversation, was that it only favors the National League. Now the National League gets to say, we have one guy who we've just been pinch hitting or whatever, and he doesn't really have a starting spot because he's not the best defender at his position, or he's blocked, or whatever reason. Now we can bat him, and then American League managers will have to pull their David Ortiz and put him at first base. Like in the 2007 World Series, we saw Kevin Youkilis sitting on the bench with Ortiz at first base, and it went much better for them than I was hoping it would. But it's different. You suddenly have to make things different for your team to be able to play the opposite league. You have to be thinking on your toes a little bit there, which is another kind of knock against the current way things are that you get to the or why the championship series are so much more meaningful than the World Series in that sense is that both teams in the championship series are playing on the same playing ground. The rules are the same. They have their designated hitters or their lack thereof. Whereas you get to the World Series and suddenly it's like, wait a minute, we weren't built for this. Well, we shouldn't have to take our third, our you know, Kevin Youkilis out of the lineup so we can keep Ortiz in the lineup. That's ridiculous. And, you know, similarly, oh, well, we don't really have a designated hitter. I guess we'll put, you know, Omar Quintanilla at second base for the glove and then DH some moderately better player who likely should be starting at their defensive position because they're good at it. And that's what makes it so much more interesting is having that difference there. There is something distinctively different. But that was a bit long for a brief interruption, but please continue your point.
Well, my response is, it sounds like even bringing that question up, you're still thinking on a league against league basis, whereas I'm advocating the entire dismissal of that. The fact that they're different is the problem. I don't want a difference between the leagues.
So then what do you do with it? Do you make everyone use it or do you make no one use it? I know I'm putting you on the spot here.
No, you're not really putting me on the spot. I don't think the answer matters. I mean, I have my own preference, but the point that I'm advocating is they should be the same and not different whichever way they go.
You are the commissioner. You are the commissioner, Greg, and your alignment is going to go into play where it is a 30-team league and that's it. And the top eight or however many you decide make the playoffs in a bracket and all that. Does every team has a designated hitter or does a pitcher bat in all 30 parks?
Neither. I would use the spring training system. I would have each team agree in advance of each game whether or not they're going to use one or not.
That is interesting. That's a good answer. I like that answer.
Teams are going to carry their David Ortizes and they're going to want the chance to use them. And certain teams are going to say, no, we are going to play the card where we take an offensive hit in batting our pitcher and you have to bat yours.
So the whole team sets precedent then?
There would have to be some way of deciding in a stalemate, yes. I guess the home team would have to, but the other way would be certain teams who want the designated hitter are going to be willing to sacrifice allowing the opposing team to use their superstar if they can use theirs too.
I feel like if that were the case, I mean, this is just kind of a random observation, not even observation, but it seems like the entire league would just kind of move toward the designated hitter as much as they might oppose it, because strategically speaking, that means you get to keep your hot hitter who doesn't really fit into the lineup defensively in the lineup.
Yeah, I thought about that too, and the idea that one would drift toward the other would be the flaw in having that suggestion, but I actually don't think that would happen. I think there's enough incentive in hamstringing your opponent who wants to play a really good offensive player who can't field into their lineup when you can effectively remove that player or create a defensive, a shortage of defense at a certain spot, by forcing them to put that player on the field.
Okay, so if they want to have Ryan Braun and Prince Fielder in the field, they better be in left field and first base like they're supposed to. None of this DH nonsense.
Whereas
David Ortiz and Kevin Youkilis or whatever, or Jim Thome and Justin Morneau or whatever.
Right.
Interesting.
Now, that could hypothetically change if the theory of roster construction changed with it, and there was a trend of every team building their roster the same way with a DH type on it. Now, I would argue that that wouldn't happen because the roster construction theory as is, it exists, but teams do crazy stuff with it all the time.
The Rockies are carrying a DH all season long.
There's no really rigid roster construction guide other than, you know, a suggestion that maybe you have, you know, one player that can play, or rather, two players that can play every position or some such. Always have at least one backup. And then, you know, five starters and six or seven relievers. And then after that, they kind of pick whoever they want. I would say that if that same principle is applied to this completely hypothetical choice, there would be some teams that would prefer to have, or that would build their roster around the preference to be able to use a designated hitter, and other teams that would build their roster the opposite way, and each one would be hoping that in a situation where they oppose a team of the opposite mentality, they will be able to get the leg up by getting to choose their way over the other.
Interesting.
But you know, that's all imaginary. So.
Oh yeah, but it's interesting though. I like. I mean, I never would have even thought to go back to a spring training. Doesn't it in the minors as well?
No. They can. They do sometimes. Like, I've seen AAA games.
Yeah, I swear I've seen DHs in security service before.
Yeah, my interpretation from looking at the minor league box scores is that about 90% of the time, they do it by league, and then for whatever reason, sometimes they agree to forego it. Because it's kind of the same argument with spring training, even though players in the minor league systems are obviously more competitive than spring training is. They're still trying to win, but at the same time, it's closer to spring training than it is the majors because the ultimate priority of the minor leagues is to develop players.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically wind up with a kind of an in-between where maybe they don't literally throw trash, random junk players, and you know that sounds harsh, but you get the type that I'm talking about, onto the field at the end of the game just because you need to play everybody. It doesn't quite happen that way, but at the same time, you don't sacrifice, for example, a rehab assignment from an important major league player for the sake of winning the game. Point being, ultimately, the minor leagues are trying to win their games more so than a spring training team is, but they still have a priority in terms of their role in the system other than winning their games.
Yeah, and obviously that makes a bit more sense with rehabbing players and so on and so forth, but yeah, you're right. I mean, obviously the minor leagues are there to win, but they want to make sure that these guys get to the majors if they can.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that's a really interesting thought, having a handshake designated hitter role.
I honestly have no idea if it would be practical or not. It just would be, I think the subjectively correct, which is not objectively correct, answer to that question. For me, I don't like the DH, but at the same time, if a merge were to happen between the two leagues, which is what I was talking about, that might be the only way to satisfy everybody.
Yeah. And honestly, I mean, we're juggling between two different mentalities on the way baseball should be enjoyed. One is the traditional sense where, as Rob Nair puts it, is based on a fear of change. Whereas the other one is, I'll even admit it, as a big National League fan, I'm very traditionalist, and the only reason why I think we should keep the designated hitter rule out. Designated hitter rule ball is much more fun because Lord knows I hate it when we have two on, two out, and the pitcher up. Oh, everyone hates it, but it's part of the game and it's part of the strategy and part of the, you know, the wondrous web that's woven around the web gems and alliteration. Mm-hmm.
Well, we've spent 52 minutes talking about this.
Well, it's a big topic. This is interesting stuff. This could,
It certainly is.
As it stands with the actual rule, just to reiterate again, we're not talking about making every team in the league pick one rule or the other. We're talking about simply breaking away divisions and having a best of five from each league make it to the playoffs. So this could change the way that we watch baseball next year. I mean, the NL West report, as Andrew Fisher knows, it may not be existent next year.
Is this actually?
Not next year. I overspoke. In future, should they agree on this? I mean, this would change the way it would just change who we see all the time. And frankly, I would not be opposed to spending less time in Petco and AT&T than possible.
The system you're talking about right now is if they do away with divisions. Yes.
Yes, the actual proposed change.
Well, because if they don't, And I don't think they're going to. I think if it does realign, they're going to keep divisional play and just move one team from one to the other.
I'm seeing 50-50 right now on whether or not it does. Because if we move, if we just move one team, if we move one team and then, I guess you could have three equal divisions in each one there, but I don't know. I mean, it almost makes more sense to do away with divisions if we're going to go and make everything, if we're going to make constant interleague. We might as well just do away with divisions at the same time for logistical purposes.
I don't agree with that. I think
do you have like a designated team then to like, you know, be the team that quote unquote joins the other league's division so they play them as regularly as other division opponents?
We talked about this, didn't we? Houston in the AL West.
I guess that works there, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, as far as interleague play goes, perpetually, you're right. We have talked about this. It still just rolls around in my head. It's a logistical nightmare. As Al Yellen from Bleed Cubby Blue and SB Nation Chicago is putting in his counter argument to Rob Nyer's article about Bring It On. It's just fear of change.
I just don't think that they're gonna find any practicality in getting rid of divisions. I think enough people are gonna point out that, you know, if we want to have any sort of economic practicality in the system of Major League Baseball operations, we're going to need to keep most of the games played against close by teams. The reason for realignment doesn't have to be getting rid of divisions, it just is for having a more balanced schedule in general, which would happen even if we kept divisions. This is why I favor keeping divisional play but oppose the league division.
Well, we'll obviously see what happens with that once they, I mean, this is going toward the next CBA and stuff like that. So once they have decided on their, you know, whatever they're going to do, we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see. And I hope we get more news soon. So,
There's a whole lot of other interesting, potential, results of a new CBA agreement. And I saw Andrew Fisher was tweeting about one of them that really excites me as well, is the likely, removal of Super 2 status.
Interesting. And that would be something you'd be interested in.
It was designed to reward players who, you know, had, you know, seen, an extra year, quote unquote, you know, almost a year basically of play, in comparison to other players who maybe had kind of, you know, slowly racked up a couple bits here and there and kind of moved their way into there. But as everybody knows now, it's almost common sense. It's punishing players.
Oh,
and their teams, because they aren't calling up the big prospect after they know, and we've seen the Rockies didn't outright say they were keeping Rex Brothers down because of fear of Super 2 status, but it had to be brought into the conversation.
Yeah, but you got Brothers, you got, look at the Giants that did it with Buster Posey, the Royals did it with Eric Hosmer. Other teams are doing it with their big hot prospect, wait until that arbitrary deadline to the detriment of the team and the player.
It could have had something to do with Anthony Rizzo too.
That too. I wasn't even thinking about Rizzo. But yeah, Rizzo is another prime example there. And, you know, there's gotta be some sort of small change, cause if Super 2 is gonna go away, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it seems like you'd be punishing a player with 4 years of league min, or not three, you know what I mean. Not 4 years of league min, but,
2.171 years of service time. The poor guy who doesn't get arbitration. That's gonna happen to somebody anyway, though. And I mean, it happened to Seth Smith last year, even with Super 2. He was 4 days below the Super 2 limit. Seth Smith was last year. So
it feels like it's a slight from the team, too. I mean, it's we would rather not pay you an extra $1 million or whatever in your first arbitration year for Super 2 rather than possibly win two or three more games with you in the lineup or on the mound.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll certainly there's certainly potential in all sorts of areas there for some changes to happen. And as I recall, the CBA does expire this year, so yes. I don't know how many of those changes are going to be enacted immediately, because they're only redesigning it now. So I don't know actually if the 2012 season is necessarily going to be the one that it might be a transitional one that like uses elements of the previous one and elements of the new one. Who knows? But
that's what we're going to be finding out over the next several months.
Yep. All right, so we've already got 1 hour down. Let's talk for a little bit. I know you had some things to say about Chris Nelson and Charlie Blackman.
Oh, boy, I wonder if we even have time to talk about them anymore than an hour. I was just so far in the season, Nelson's, you know, posted about an 833 OPS and a lot of extra base hits, and Charlie Blackman has been the lineup mainstay despite let me pull up his numbers right quick here, but they haven't been as good as Chris Nelson's. Better defensive play, obviously, but at the same time, why is Blackman is, you know, yeah, he's batting, not counting anything today, he's batting 250, hasn't taken a walk yet, and has only hit singles, so he's
and of course, we have to point out the small sample size there.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's no doubt. If you look at his swing, he's got a good swing. He's making contact. He stole a base today. I mean, Charlie Blackman's gonna be a good baseball player, but Nelson looks like he is also going to be a good baseball player, again, in very small sample size. But like, I was at Sunday's game today, and it just boggled the mind why Johnny Herrera got the start. And yes, there's the whole mentality of keep your players in the lineup so that they're fresh. Chris Nelson so far has done everything except for make that one throw that Johnny Herrera would do. Even in his, he went 0-for-2 on the day because he came in the middle of the game as a double switch, but he grounded out to the right side, like, which is the big thing that everyone is super excited that Johnny Herrera can do. When he makes an out, he makes it out in the best place. Yeah, I mean, Nelson grounded out to the right side and it moved Jose Morales from second to third. And I mean, it's just one game, but we lost one game. I'm not guaranteeing that Nelson would have had another two hit day, but I do think he had an opportunity to get a hit more than Johnny Herrera did, especially when even when Herrera's not doing even the things that make Johnny Herrera Johnny Herrera, right? Like popping up a bunt. I'm being unfair based on one game here. True enough, but with Nelson hitting, we're trying to win games here. This ain't a little league, and
this is a huge opportunity for him because, I mean, unlike Blackman, who is not only newer but also still has, you know, all of his option years, and also is, for all intents and purposes, for now, unless Dexter Fowler continues to spiral downward and downward, he's at this point a replacement player for an injured player who would be getting starts over him. Whereas Nelson, you know, with Lopez not working out and Herrera not really inspiring any longer a starting role, Nelson doesn't have anybody on his heels, and he has the direct shot, the most direct shot to earning a longer term position as the second baseman, and he's out of options after this year. So
Nelson has been very impressive so far in his brief playing time in the majors, and he is in a prime spot right now because Blackman has, you know, when Dexter Fowler comes back, there's still the chance they might, you know, he has an option year left, right? I just don't have the site up in front
Who
of me.
Who does? Fowler? Yeah, Fowler, I believe, has two option years left.
Because he never got optioned. Yeah, that's right. Except well, that 1 year.
Last year. Yeah. He was brought up in 2009, spontaneously. He wasn't even on the roster at the time. He made the team out of spring training over Scott Podsednik. And, yeah, he wasn't optioned that year, and then he was struggling in 2010, so they used the first one.
Anyways, I would not be surprised to see Fowler reactivated and immediately optioned. Not that that's what's going to happen, or that I'm necessarily waving that flag.
It's possible, especially if, I mean, Fowler's not coming back right away. He still has time before he's even eligible, and even then I doubt they throw him straight back into the mix. But I think a lot of it will, of course, depend on what Blackman does. Mm-hmm. You know, if he catches fire and becomes, you know, a really good spark, and I mean, it's obviously not just because Blackman got called up, but he certainly hasn't been interfering with the rise in offensive production recently. So he has that going for him so far. But, you know, if he ends up contributing in a very solid way, then I can absolutely see them doing what you are describing. But at the same time, go ahead.
Well, just my point with Blackman wasn't even so much, it is he does have someone nipping at his heels in the form of Dexter Fowler looking to, you know, stop striking out the damn much and reclaiming his spot as the guy. Whereas Nelson, has nobody behind him. I mean, yeah, you could call it Brad Emos, I guess, but Nelson would really have to hit the skids to make a move like that.
Yeah.
So there's definitely, Nelson is in an absolutely prime spot to take this particular bull by its horns and hold down the starting role and be the starting guy.
I hope he does too, because I'm not necessarily one of the quote unquote free Chris Nelson movement, but I'd call myself a fan.
Yeah, I want to see him do well. We want to see everyone do well, and I think Nelson. I think he is in a prime spot, and I really, for his sake, hope he claims this spot, because this is your shot, dude, and this might be your last shot to be a Major League Baseball player for the Colorado Rockies. Not necessarily that he is super-duper gung-ho, but the team has put a lot of patience into him over the years based on his injury history and stuff like that. So, you know, again, for his sake, go Chris Nelson, hold the spot down, and let's have a real second baseman for once.
Now, one other quick note here. I just pulled up Twitter for the first time since I got home, and I did not know that Mike McHenry just got traded again.
Yep, traded to the Pittsburgh Pirates for, I don't believe for anything has been announced yet, but...
Cash or a player to be named later.
Yeah, there you go. I actually corrected Devin, I believe. Devin something or other, who is the beat writer for the Pirates who was reporting it, and he said that Mike McHenry had zero... No, had not played in the majors before, and I said, he had 9 plate appearances in 2010, which he struck out in 5 of.
Yeah, and he hit in the 3-hole in the last game of the season.
Yeah, really.
I wrote his player review over the offseason, so I remember a couple of those little details, yeah.
Well, that's all I have about those. It's an interesting situation right now with Blackmon and Nelson. Nelson is to hold the spot by continuing to play well, and because of lack of second base options, he has a good shot of holding it by just keeping on. But Blackmon is going to have to not necessarily, you know, pick up your game, but I mean, we're talking about 5 games, 20 plate appearances so far, and he has, you know, 5 hits, which isn't miserable, I guess, but a .250 batting average isn't very inspiring, especially when he hasn't walked yet or hit an extra base hit yet. It could happen. It could happen soon, and I have faith that Charlie Blackmon's going to be a good baseball player, but he's going to have to start showing it sooner than later because, like we just said, Fowler could be back any moment here, or once he's eligible.
Well, the nice thing about Blackmon is he has time. There's no immediate constraint on Blackman's position in the organization like there is with Nelson. Nelson's got to get it done now, and Blackmon doesn't need to really, you know, break into the picture full time right away. I'm sure he wants to, but you know, it doesn't always happen that way. Sometimes your players have to go up and down a little bit. And I mean, Fowler himself, kind of after getting a surprise promotion straight from Double A into the majors in 2009, you know, he had a little hiccup last year and potentially more in the future. So you don't always just like, you don't always Troy Tulowitzki it, basically.
Yeah.
Or Matt Reynolds, which is, we actually discussed this on last week's show. These players that, manage to, you know, find a time to be called up at some point and then don't really look like they have any reason to send them down anytime soon. So, yeah, I don't know if there's anything else to talk about there either. We are 1 hour, 7 minutes in. Any other notes to cover before we take off?
Well, Ubaldo Jimenez gave up 2 earned runs on Sunday. He gave up 7 runs total, 2 earned runs. He gave 3 home runs and only allowed 2 earned runs. Yeah, baseball is a funny game like that.
Indeed.
That's all I had for today.
Okay. In that case, I think we will call that a podcast. We should be back next week once again. One of these weeks, we're probably going to take a break. But I don't know when that's going to be. Maybe the All-Star week, we should take a break.
That sounds like a great one.
So, yeah, we'll plan on being back then next Monday, June the 20th. And until then, on behalf of the two of us, we'll see you later. Take care.